Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Welcome back to the Roundtable. I'm Ian Pickus.
Well, I'm an outsider.
Major League Baseball is the toughest level of the sport, with the world's best players and highest quality of play. But contrary to what modern fans used to on-demand scores and video might think, it wasn't always this way. Baseball researcher and author and erstwhile copier salesman Scott Simkus makes the case in his new book, Outsider Baseball, The Weird World of Hardball on the Fringe, 1876 through 1950, that the sport was a different world in its sprawling early days. There were foreign barnstorming teams, clowns, bearded cults, and pre-Jackie Robinson, integrated play. Scott Simkus' book is published by Chicago Review Press, and it's a pleasure to welcome him to the roundtable.
Thanks, Ian. Thanks for having me on.
What first attracted you to outsiders in the game? Before the book, you did a newsletter.
That's right. Like a lot of people, I had grandfathers who played baseball back in the old days, played some semi-pro ball here in Chicago. So I grew up listening to their stories. One of my grandfathers had played against the Cuban Stars, I guess, back in the 1930s. So I've always had an interest in baseball history. And, I started to dig through some of the old newspapers and the microfilm, looking for stories and box scores. It was sort of a personal pursuit at the beginning. And then I started to stumble across all these really fascinating teams, these traveling teams from Japan that came to the United States in the 1930s, and the House of David, which was this religious cult that traveled across the country. And what caught my eye was that some of these teams were actually good enough to beat major league ball clubs on occasion in exhibition games, or beat minor league teams. And some of the players ended up in the Hall of Fame. And so that's where the research started.
Why did you want to focus on this particular 75 years?
That's when the heart of, this sort of forgotten corner of professional baseball existed. What happened in 1950, really the late 40s, is once you had integration, once Jackie Robinson joined the Brooklyn Dodgers, there was a couple things that came into play. There was Jackie Robinson and integration of Major League Baseball. There was the emergence of television, and there was sort of the post-World War II economic boom, where you had the highways and people moving to the suburbs. And that sort of ended this world of the barnstorming teams that had existed and really had thrived from, say, 1910 to the 1940s, just before World War II.
I want to get back to something you brought up just briefly a moment ago, which I never knew. I think American baseball fans understand the history of the spread of baseball, and they know that Babe Ruth went to Japan, and they know that American teams went to Japan and brought the sport there, but I didn't know that Japanese teams barnstormed the U.S. also.
Yeah, I didn't either. That was one of those things that I stumbled across. I mean, there was a famous tour in 1934 when Jimmy Fox and Lou Gehrig and Babe Ruth went over there and sort of demolished the competition. What is far less known is that basically that same All-Star team, the Tokyo Giants, came to the United States in 1935 and 36 and traveled around the U.S. and played like a 100-game season. Most of their games were against semi-pro teams, but they would play 20, 25 games against Pacific Coast League and other minor league clubs of a pretty high caliber, and they actually sort of held their own. And it gives you an indication that there actually was some pretty good talent in Japan in the 30s. Might not have been major league caliber. It's not like the Ichiro Suzukis and the guys that we see today. But they certainly had some guys who were really good at baseball. And that tour is far less known, the fact that they came here and played throughout the West Coast and the Midwest back in the mid-30s and sort of held their own.
Another bit of fact-checking you did was on the Negro League star Josh Gibson, who, that's another thing I think baseball fans grow up with, hearing about this guy who maybe hit 800 home runs, you know, as great as Ruth and Aaron were.
Right.
Who knows what Gibson would have done in the major leagues, but you found that's maybe not entirely true.
Yeah. I one of the chapters I devote to Gibson, who was a fantastic player, probably one of the two or three greatest Negro League players from the years before 1950. And I try to figure out how many home runs he actually hit based on the box scores that I've collected, and based on some of the research of other guys who have been tracking his career. We know a lot more than we did, say, 25 years ago. And, it's a sort of an interesting approach, trying to figure out exactly how many he hit and sort of separating some of the hyperbole from the facts. And I think there's no doubt he was an outstanding player. I don't know if he hit 800 home runs.
We have to talk about the House of David team. They're on the cover of your book. Some people will know their story, but what was this team?
Well, I think they were probably the most popular barnstorming team in the country in the 1920s and 30s. They would actually have three or four different ball clubs traveling across the country, and they would sell out pretty much every ballpark that they showed up at. Not only did they play a really good brand of baseball, but there was this sort of mystery surrounding these guys. They would have these long beards, and they didn't cut their hair. They were members of a religious cult based out of Michigan, and so they would travel across the country spreading the good word and playing a real high level, entertaining level of baseball. And occasionally they would beat major league teams in spring training. They would travel down to Florida and played against the New York Yankees and the Brooklyn Dodgers and just about every major league team at some point in time. And there was sort of this mystery: how good are these guys? I tracked down some of their records and tried to determine if the talent matches up with the legend of the team.
Now, you write a little bit about the baseball pioneer and someone who kept in line with some of the weirdness, Bill Veeck. But I wonder, do you think there's a modern heir to this type of baseball play, in our game today? Because really, the major leagues seem awful sanitary compared to a lot of what you researched.
Yeah, well, it was, things were just sort of wild. People were trying to figure out how to run a successful baseball business back in the day. And we talked a little bit about Veeck, who was one of the pioneers in terms of sort of unique promotions and stuff that is actually sort of commonplace in the big leagues now, but it's all very corporate and maybe not as fun as it used to be back in the old days when they were just having fun. I don't know who the modern era is. The business has become so big, and it's so corporate, I guess would be the word I want to go with, that you don't see a lot of innovation. Yet, on the other hand, I think the talent that we see today is better and more diverse than we've ever seen. You've got great players from Korea and Japan in the major leagues. You have the guys from Cuba. You've got Cespedes and Puig. You see a lot of the elements from my book. They're all in the big leagues, including the beards. And I'm fascinated with the Boston Red Sox the last couple of years sort of look like the House of David team from the 30s and 40s. So you see those elements, and you see the genesis of them in outsider baseball, and you see a lot of that stuff in today's baseball. I think the quality of baseball today is outstanding, but it's a little bit less spontaneous than it was back in the old days in terms of the promotions and stuff.
Scott Simkus is the author of Outsider Baseball, The Weird World of Hardball on the Fringe, 1876 through 1950, from Chicago Review Press. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show, and thanks for having a little fun with us.
Ian, thank you so much for having me. Have a great day.
And you're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.